Earth.
Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. Welcome to the broadcast. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. My name's JD. We are live right now, and it is the 8th day of April, which makes it a Wednesday. What can we say about a Wednesday? Not much. Crux of the week. We're all going to get through it together. But it is fascinating how quickly we are munching through April right now, isn't it? I mean, holy cow, we're about halfway through April already. It's just miraculous how quickly things are flying by. We've got a huge show for you guys today. It is going to be awesome. I'm telling you that right up front. Appreciate all you guys hanging out in the chat room, getting a full crowd in there already. All our local regular people in the morning. Can't tell you guys how much I appreciate you guys being in there. If you guys are listening right now out there in the radio land, we are live, so you can go to truthfrequencyradio.com and check out the chat room and talk to a whole bunch of other listeners from around the world. It's a great place to put your questions for our guests. We always have the very best guests in the world on this program. I gotta tell you, yesterday, that conversation with Dr. Tenpenny was just about the best conversation I think I've ever had in my life. I just cannot tell you how much I love that woman. Just amazing. It's so nice to have people like her out in the universe just doing the right thing, you know, working hard for all of us and exposing truth. And somebody who can speak so candidly about reality is just really refreshing. And, man, I hope you guys took a lot away from that. Today is going to be no shortage of amazing L.A. Marzulli, the one and only international researcher and explorer, just amazingly fascinating gentleman as usual. So he's going to be joining us in about an hour. Cannot tell you guys how much I'm looking forward to that. I know that all of you guys out there are looking forward to that as well. So if you do have questions for Mr. Marzulli, feel free to stick them in the chat room, and I'll do my best to try and weave them into the tapestry of our interview that's going to happen in about an hour. Also, Kenneth Shorten Jr. will be joining us tomorrow. We'll be talking about probably the economy and some, geopolitical happenings, things that are going on around the world and some of the crazy events. You know, everybody's been paying attention to Greece quite a bit here in the last few days, and I've got more economic news about them today. So, lots of stuff going on around the world. Seems like everything is just kind of culminating to some sort of nexus, and I definitely want to pick L.A. Marzulli's brain about that as well today. And I do believe that Andrew Gause is going to be joining us on Friday as well, but don't get the chisels out and put that in stone yet, because I'm not totally sure, but hopefully, either way, we'll have a great show. It'll be great. We always have good stuff going on. So anyway, that's what's going on here right now. Not a whole lot in terms of housekeeping announcements or anything like that. So I say we just hop right into the news because, again, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. And this wasn't really my intention, guys. This is just kind of how it turned out. When I was trying to cultivate all of the news internationally yesterday, stuff that's going on around the world, you know, I pulled together, I guess, 8, 9, you know, pretty pertinent articles from around the globe. And every single one of them has something to do with war. And it was not intentional. I didn't really realize it until this morning. Lots of time there's celebrations, there's, God forbid, catastrophic events, there's earth changes, there's all kinds of stuff going on. Nope, not right now. Everything is war. I mean, really fundamentally, it's either about how we're getting ready for war or who we're going to arm next or, which two countries are going to basically continue to be at each other's throats. That's the name of the game for the first 5-6 minutes here, guys. So I don't know what else to tell you, but that's basically what's going on in the world. So we're going to go real quick, hop around the planet here in your international news. This is stuff kind of relating to the Middle East right now, but U.S. Department of Defense and the Pentagon move as of yesterday. They renewed the international coalition support for any ground operations by the Iraqi forces to liberate the Nineveh province from the terrorist organization ISIS. So again, the U.S. Department of Defense and the Pentagon basically saying, we are going to renew this international coalition support. We're going to continue to send money to Iraq. And they're basically pointing out that Tikrit, since Tikrit has essentially been cleared of ISIS now, was basically a great litmus test for how successful they could be. So they're going to continue this military cooperation between Washington and Baghdad. So again, the Pentagon spokesperson, Colonel Steve Warren, said that the U.S.-led international coalition, which includes more than 60 countries, will provide air support to the Iraqi government and the Ministry of Defense in ground operations against ISIS in Nineveh. Warren also added that eliminating ISIS in Iraq requires, in addition to military approaches, the adoption of political reconciliation and the establishment of national unity to overcome sectarianism. And I tell you, I know there's a lot of listeners out there that are definitely praying for unity in Iraq, and I'll leave that one kind of on the table there, but that's something that I'm hoping happens sometime soon. The situation in Iraq is obviously very complicated because of the tensions imposed by sectarian conflict over power, according to Mr. Warren. I would say, too, this probably has a lot to do with getting ready to go and stomp through Mosul. I mean, the U.S. coalition forces have dropped a whole bunch of leaflets. I think they dropped like 60,000 leaflets again up in Mosul, telling people that basically zero hour was coming down soon. And we've also had the reports about ISIS essentially digging trenches and things around Mosul to try and protect it from the onslaught that will be coming down soon. A lot of us hoping that Iraq can get out of this situation. And more bad news coming out of Iraq now in Tikrit. Actually, there has been a mass grave that may contain the bodies of up to 1,700 Iraqi soldiers killed by ISIS. So Iraqi forensic experts right now are exhuming a mass grave of soldiers believed to have been killed by the Islamic State militants in the newly liberated city of Tikrit. In June of 2014, the militants came from the Islamic State, ISIS or ISIL. They launched a surprise attack on Camp Speaker, which is a former U.S. Army base where hundreds of captured Iraqi soldiers were summarily executed following a month-long siege. Forensic experts starting the exhumations on Monday have concentrated their efforts on 8 locations inside Tikrit's complex of presidential palaces where the killings are believed to have occurred. And this is Kamil Amin from Iraq's Human Rights Ministry, who was saying this to the Associated Press just yesterday. So again, experts are going to continue to conduct DNA testing to identify the bodies, but it already appears that the graves are those of Iraqi soldiers who fought against ISIS last year. The Shia militias who launched the military operation to take Tikrit back on the 2nd of March have vowed to avenge the killing of the Iraqi soldiers, and it's now anticipated that the Iraqi army is going to be moving on the ISIS-controlled Mosul, which is about 335 miles north along the Tigris River, which is ISIS's most vital stronghold in Iraq right now. So, you know, they're exhuming this very, very, very large mass grave there in Tikrit, which is absolutely tragic because this is obviously people from Iraq that we had armed and we're trying to teach how to fight. And then, of course, we funneled a bunch of arms to ISIS, and ISIS went basically crazy and undid about, you know, a decade's worth of work that we had done there in Iraq. But if there is going to be a silver lining here, I think the only thing that you could really point out is the fact that the Shia militias who were so successful in taking back Tikrit, well, this is going to put a little wind in their sails, a little fire in the old bellies, I think, because, you know, seeing 1,700 of your countrymen slaughtered probably would get you pretty pissed off, I imagine. So I believe that ISIS's days are numbered there in Mosul. Talking also about things that are going on in the Middle East, we got to hop over to what is going on. Hey, morning, Kevin. Happy to see you in the chat room today. Everybody keep checking out Kev Baker's show. It's getting better and better every day. Yesterday was spectacular, as per usual. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Israel right now. I'm just trying to run through all this news because there's just so much going on today, guys. U.S. President Barack Obama has now turned down calls from the prime minister there, Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu was trying to make Iran's recognition of the State of Israel part of this deal on Tehran's controversial nuclear program, right? So Barack basically said the notion that we would condition Iran – not getting nuclear weapons and a verifiable deal on Iran, recognizing Israel, is really akin to saying that we won't sign a deal unless the nature of the Iranian regime completely transforms. And he says, this is again Barack Obama talking, he says, I think that is a fundamental misjudgment. So again, you know, Barack really kind of sticking it to Netanyahu right now. And, the situation back and forth here, I think I really think that the situation between Barack and Netanyahu is way, way more tenuous than people want to admit right now. To be perfectly honest, I think that these guys are, not allies at this point. And I think that Barack has realigned most of his cabinet administration to be, pretty staunchly anti-Israel at this point. And you guys can read into that or think about it what you will. I'm not really a proponent of anybody murdering anybody for any reason. So, you know, I'm not necessarily anti, the Jewish state. I'm anti them killing other people and taking other people's lands just for, you know, the sake of doing it. Anyway, the P5 plus one powers, which of course we're talking about the US, the UK, China, Russia, France, and Germany, have all said that they agreed to this initial preliminary framework, with this much anticipated deal. And they, of course, we had that article on Monday. They agreed to all this stuff on Thursday. Although, of course, both sides kind of, you know, talking to their people in different ways. They're basically saying that different agreements have been made on both sides. People trying to save face on both sides, basically, is what's going on right now. But this announcement from Barack Obama was followed by demands from Netanyahu to again include unambiguous Iranian recognition of Israel's right to exist. I think we should make a deal with them. Now that I'm getting my brain going with some coffee here, we should totally do that. We should say, okay, if we're going to sign this coalition agreement between Iran, and we'll make one of the qualifications be that Iran has to recognize Israel if Israel recognizes Palestine. How about that? That seems fair, right? That's a fair trade. We'll recognize you, you recognize them, and everybody just gets nuclear weapons and nobody blows each other up anymore. Boom, problem solved. I still like the Iron Dome reverse polarity idea too, but that then you get into a little bit of a Big Brother argument. But anyway, the U.S. president reminded, too, also that there are a whole host of countries in the Middle East that do not yet recognize Israel. But the most important thing for Israelis to know is that they can defend themselves and that they have America, the world's most powerful country, there to protect them alongside their military and their intelligence operations. So, again, that was a quote from Barack Obama talking about Israel's new demand to really push Iran to recognize the state of Israel. But Barack says that's probably not going to happen. So what is the ramification of that? Top Israeli minister on Tuesday brushed aside President Barack Obama's pledges to stand by Israel, ensuring it that it is not weakened, saying that such a promise will be worthless if Iran is allowed to get the bomb. So again, Barack Obama said on Sunday he would consider it a fundamental failure of his presidency if Israel emerges weakened as a consequence of the nuclear agreement with Iran, as promised to stand by Israel if it is attacked by any state or actor. But we also had that wire leak that supposedly, allegedly came out of the South African intelligence agency there that was pretty specific, saying that Barack had already talked to Iraq about potentially using the area in Iraq and the bases that we've got there to shoot down any pending Israeli attacks on Iran. So again, we already know that if Israel launches some kind of preemptive attack against Iran, that Barack Obama is not going to allow that to happen. Apparently, that's what the alleged leaks have been saying. So anyway, Israel essentially saying now that Obama's statements of support are very pleasant sounding, but Israel's strategic affairs minister reported in an interview that no assistance and no backing will help, again, if Iran does acquire these nuclear weapons. Again, you got to remember, too, boy, it was a really – there's so much news to cover just in this one topic, and I probably haven't even mentioned the fact that I want to say it was last week that in a very unprecedented event Barack Obama or part of his apparatus actually disclosed for the first time the totality of Iran, of Israel's nuclear program, of their armaments, about how many they've got and things like that. And it was kind of came out like an oopsie, but it obviously wasn't an oopsie given the timing of all this stuff's going on right now. But it is really apparent that that Israel has between 200 and 400 nuclear weapons. And, you know, the whole concept of the way nuclear weapons really work on this planet is mutually assured destructions, right? That's the whole thing. If you shoot us, we'll shoot you back. You kill us, we'll make you deader. That's the whole game here. So, the fact that Iran is one of the only people in the area there that's not allowed to have nuclear weapons to defend themselves or under the thumb of all of these sanctions. And at the same time, there's been other reports saying that the Netanyahu regime, when he was kind of, you know, in charge for the last few years, has been giving bad information to the nuclear inspectors at the UN. So that's where all the sanctions came from in the first place. So again, Mossad totally tied up into all this. And, again, this situation between the war of words, I guess, going on between Obama and Netanyahu is still continuing. And so anyway, who knows where that's going to go. I guarantee that LA will probably have something to say about that in about 45 minutes. So we'll have to check with him about that, too. Also, in another related story, the United States has also decided to now resume its military assistance to Egypt, despite the fact that its continuing tyrannical state of affairs continues to exist. And this is those continuing tyrannical state of affairs were what first prompted President Barack Obama to stop sending weapons to the Middle Eastern country in the first place. So Obama even personally called the Egyptian President El-Sisi to inform him of the decision to resume the 1.3 million in annual arms assistance to the country that has been without a parliament for nearly 3 years now. In addition to Sisi ruling without a legislative body or any scheduled upcoming elections, Egypt has imprisoned journalists, prosecuted gays and lesbians, and carried out mass executions of protesters. Obama had imposed the arms freeze after Egypt's military overthrew the country's democratically elected government in 2013, and Sisi helped lead that coup that removed President Mohamed Morsi, who is the Muslim Brotherhood, from power, right? More than 40,000 people were arrested in the immediate aftermath of Sisi's takeover, and none of them have ever been accounted for. Obama's concerns over the ongoing human rights situations were apparently finally trumped by national security matters, according to The Times. So again, this is who is this speaking here? This is Mr. Brahma himself. He says the White House has made no effort to assert that Egypt has made the credible progress towards democracy that Mr. Obama demanded when he halted the arms deliveries in October of 2013, but instead the decision was justified as being in the interest of U.S. national security. This is, again, a statement from the White House yesterday. So Obama's turnaround will result in Egypt getting 12 F-16 fighters and 20 Harpoon missiles, plus equipment and ordnances for 125 Abram tanks, otherwise known as drone targets. And this is not their intention, but it will be read by Sisi as acceptance of his legitimacy, which is kind of the fear here right now. And you have to understand, too, Egypt is part of this coalition being led by Saudi Arabia attacking the Houthi rebels in Yemen right now. So again, this is more proxy war being funded by the United States, just like we are providing weapons to Poland to use in Ukraine against the we're fighting so many proxy wars right now. I wonder what peace would look like. I wonder what it would be like to work with professionals. Just gotta wonder once in a while, don't you? Anyway. The administration officials cited insurgent attacks in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula among the reasons for restoring military relationship between Washington and Cairo. Egypt has agreed to help Saudi Arabia's intervention in Yemen and be part of a new combined military force with other Arab states. In February, Egypt engaged in a retaliatory airstrike against Islamic militants in Libya who had beheaded Egyptian Christians. And only last year, the Human Rights Watch reported that Sisi's security forces have carried out mass arrests and torture that harken back to the darkest days of former President Mubarak's rule. So again, fomenting more war, proxy war, go team, good to be a part of it. This isn't really, I guess, bad news. I don't know. Syria is coming out and saying they're basically ready to offer the Palestinians a whole bunch of firepower to support their battle in with ISIS in that refugee camp that we mentioned last week, right? That deteriorating humanitarian situation in the Yarmouk camp pushed by the UN Security Council to demand greater access to residents trapped between the encroaching ISIS jihadists and the besieging government forces. So this fierce clashes that began on April 1st have ceased now, but the government air force is still bombing rebel targets in the camp, which lies about 4 miles from central Damascus. And in the capital there, Deputy Foreign Minister Mekdad met with a delegation from the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which was headed by a guy whose name I can't pronounce. And they said, with the exception of direct armed intervention, Syrian authorities are ready to support the Palestinian fighters in a number of ways, including militarily, to push out ISIS from the camp. So again, we had that whole story about 40,000 of these Palestinian refugees that were taken over in that Yarmouk camp, and it does look like Syria is now starting to provide them some military assistance. But holy cow, talk about a quagmire in Syria right now, just like Libya, just British, basically like everyone else. Hang on one second. Got to get a little chat going on. So one, yes, yes. Perfect. All right. Talking also real quickly too, I wanted to just touch on this story. New Chinese submarines are getting ready to be delivered to Pakistan, as well as, if I scroll down here enough, the new Chinese Thunderbolts are replacing American Cobras over there. These are the new Z-10 attack helicopters for Pakistan. Why am I mentioning Pakistan right now, and why am I mentioning the fact that they're getting all this military equipment from China? Well, I think we had a story a couple of weeks ago, maybe not even a couple of weeks ago, about the largest solar project that China's ever built in Pakistan. And we've been talking quite a bit about the strange bedfellows that are being created as these other countries are starting to move into the region and starting to put all of these large infrastructure projects in place. They're going to want to keep those things safe because eventually, you know, they're going to own all that stuff. So we're seeing now China stepping up. They're going to be delivering, I think, 20, some pretty, pretty high-tech new naval submarines to the Pakistani Navy there, who is actually really lagging behind the Indian Navy. I wasn't aware of that. And also some of these pretty, very impressive, actually, I won't say pretty, I'll say very impressive Chinese attack helicopters, these Z-10 attack helicopters. So again, we're just starting to, just wanting to point out, we're seeing more investment from foreign players in that region right now. And as that happens, you start to see how these bedfellows are getting made and how some of the entanglements, you know, the world's just getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And apparently because of that, everybody's got to be armed to the teeth, ladies and gentlemen. So again, that's what's going on there. What else is happening? An Afghan soldier killed one American soldier and wounded two others in Kabul as of yesterday. An Afghan soldier apparently opened fire at a group of U.S. troops in the city of Jalalabad in eastern Afghanistan on Wednesday. So he killed an American soldier and wounded at least two others before he was shot dead. And this incident happened after a meeting between Afghan provincial leaders and a U.S. embassy official in the compound of the provincial governor in Jalalabad. That's a fun word to say, just putting that out, Jalalabad. And the U.S. embassy staff were all accounted for. They returned safely to their mission headquarters. So this is the latest in so-called insider attacks or instances when the Afghan soldiers or policemen have turned their weapons on their fellow American or other NATO colleagues. And this attack is also the second fatality suffered by NATO since the beginning of the war, when the coalition launched its new mission in Afghanistan called Resolute Support after foreign combat troops withdrew from the country. So not good there. Not good at all. And here's another not good story. I don't like this at all because this, boy, if you can't see where this is going, woo, buddy. Police in a northern Indian city said on Tuesday they now have a new weapon for controlling unruly protesters in the world's largest democracy. They have now initiated the program involving pepper spraying drones. Yep, that's right. The police chief of Lucknow said his officers have successfully test flown the newly purchased drones with a view to better control the crowds. The results were brilliant, apparent to them. He said, we have managed to work out how to use it precisely to target mobs in winds and in congested areas. The pepper spray is non-lethal, but very effective in mob control, and we can spray it from different heights to have maximum results. So the city police force have bought 5 different drones. They cost about $10,000 a piece, with their introduction planned for later this month. And the unmanned drones are equipped with a high-resolution camera, and they can carry about 4.5 pounds of pepper spray and fly within about a 1 kilometer radius of the operator. And Lucknow police have previously used drones for aerial surveillance, including during religious festivals in the city. And Lucknow has a population of 2 million, making it India's 8th most populous city in India. So again, pepper spraying drones coming to a city near you, ladies and gentlemen, for crowd control. So excited to be on this planet right now. It's just getting better and better every day. You know, we seem to be moving towards peace and understanding just in leaps and bounds, don't we? It's just amazing to be a part of it all. Okay, moving back over into the United States right now. We got to talk a little bit more about California, because obviously this water situation in California is going to be way worse than I think people are realizing. And we're starting to see it. We're starting to see it now. Okay. So, the initial reports again were that some communities were going to have to cut their water by about 25%. That's not necessarily true right now. In an aggressive push to reduce this water usage statewide, regulators now are proposing that the biggest urban water centers cut consumption by as much as 35% by next year. And the State Water Resources Council Board unveiled this plan yesterday, and this would place the heaviest conservation burden on cities and towns with the highest rates of per capita water consumption, which would include small rural communities as well as affluent enclaves like Newport Beach and Beverly Hills. Cities say that the lowest per capita water use includes East LA, Santa Cruz, and Seal Beach. They're still going to be required to cut their consumption by about 10%. But here's where we start getting into the real deal stuff, the fines here, guys. Agencies are saying that people who do not comply with the rules from an agency standpoint. So again, the State Water Resources Control Board is who runs the state agencies. The state agencies are working on a county level. So I think there's like 70 of those in California. The agencies themselves now are being tasked with controlling the citizens that fall underneath them. We talked yesterday about the citizens potentially being impacted by as much as a $500 a day fine. The agencies are, if they are not compliant with the subjugation of their people, they could face fines up to $10,000 a day. So you could see how this is starting to roll downhill here. The conservation targets were part of this new framework, obviously, that the state board unveiled to comply with Jerry Brown's historic order requiring this 25% cut. And the five member board whose members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate could adopt the plan by May. So the board is seeking feedback on the plan, which could change before that vote. Most communities will be required again to cut water between 20 and 25%, including LA, San Diego, Long Beach, Santa Ana, San Jose, and Anaheim. This is a big deal. This is a big deal. I got more to talk about this here in just a second, too. We're getting ready to go to this break. But wondering how they're going to do this. How are they going to know who's using water? Well, I got a couple of insights on that, and you're not going to like any of them, ladies and gentlemen. So we're going to run off to this quick 3-minute break. Really appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat room. I know there's lots of chat going on. I haven't been able to read any of it. Love you guys, Kev. Hang in there. Thanks for listening, brother. We'll see you guys in just a few minutes, guys. Back in 3 minutes.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Doctor Ministries with Kenneth Emmanuel.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out in the chat room and for being here live with us every day. It just makes me so happy to have you guys with us along for the ride. I hope you guys are taking a lot away from the show. Appreciate all the support and definitely appreciate the support you guys are showing to Truth Frequency Radio too, man. I'll tell you what, this place is just absolutely ridiculously huge already, and it's just going to get bigger and bigger. I mean, there are so many quality hosts on this network at this point. I could spend the next half an hour just talking about how much I enjoy being part of this team here and how great it is. I'm sure I've said it all before, so I'll get you guys off that subject. But just wanted to really tell you guys again how much I appreciate you guys being here with me in the morning every day. It really just makes me happy. Okay, we got to talk about this water situation too, because obviously they're ramping it up. They're ramping it up, and I don't think people are taking this situation in California seriously enough yet, because again, this is just kind of breaking over the weekend and just starting to be unfolded out into the populace here, you know, over the early parts of this week. This is going to be a big deal. This is going to be a big deal. So also because of this disappointing conservation numbers, which it, basically when they did this check last week to see how much water they had left, they also went back and looked at some older results to see what the water consumption was over the last year, because obviously they've been talking about the drought in California. They've been recommending that people cut back on water and things like that. Very, very little of that actually happened. They looked over the totality of the last year and saw only a decrease of about 2.5%. So obviously not anywhere near the target of Governor Brown's 25%. Some of the cities again being afflicted with up to a 35%. Water restriction. I can't even imagine how crazy it must be in California right now. But also because of those disappointing conservation numbers, looking back over the last year, the California Water Resources Board plans to lay out a more detailed water restriction policy. And this one will include a statewide system, listen to this, where neighbors can report neighbors or business owners who waste water. And this system is expected to be up and running over the next couple of weeks. This is going to be a new online system to report water wasters. It's obviously got a lot of residents pretty fired up right now. People are not happy about the fact that they are going to be asked to be reporting on their neighbors and businesses, especially given the fact that the fracking industry still wastes about 2 million gallons a day on fracking. So that'd be the first call I would make. I would go to a fracking site and I would report them for wasting water. But again, you're seeing the result. We're going to see neighbor turned against neighbor in California here pretty quick. And I don't think that's a slope that anybody wants to be on. In addition to that, the introduction of smart meters is moving into the businesses there. Right now, they're actually already doing this. So water authorities are using this new smart meter to crack down on people and businesses wasting water in light of these new water restrictions. But these new smart meters that are going to be attached to the water spigots there that you've got in California apparently collect data every 5 minutes, and then after midnight, the cell phone that is built into the smart meter makes a phone call, calls into the database, and then they upload all of that information. So they have daily updated information on water usage from all of the businesses, and they're obviously going to be moving this probably towards the people side of things too, not just businesses. I would imagine that you'll start seeing smart meters as part of this whole water restriction thing in California. I think we're going to see an exodus from California this year if this drought doesn't get turned around. And again, we have to remember this is a controlled drought. This is an absolute controlled situation. We could make this go away tomorrow if we wanted to, but we don't want to because it's not about that. And they're going to turn that whole state back into a desert. You mark my words. We're going to see an exodus. People are going to be fleeing to Oregon and Washington. It's going to happen. Gonna happen, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what's going on in California water shortage situation. We also have another really weird situation that took place yesterday. Widespread power outages affected all kinds of sites across Washington, D.C. and its suburbs yesterday afternoons. Officials cited an explosion at a Maryland power plant and also said there was no known link to terrorism. But I don't know. I mean, my conspiratorial hat was obviously pretty juiced up by Monday night. And this is the second time that, and we're not just talking about, you know, the library or the museum or something like that. We're talking about the White House, the Department of Energy was out of power, which just drips with irony, I know. A lot of very serious, the State Department was out of power again, and we're talking about a lot of hours. You would think all of those people would have backup systems, and they apparently do not. So very unusual stuff going on all around D.C. yesterday. Let the conspiratorial juices flow. Again, they're saying there's no nexus to terrorism, but in another article that I will get to when we get over into the science and tech stuff, talking about this hack of the State Department by the Russians. This was all over the news yesterday, and is apparently coming out that the Russians are the worst people in the world, and they're essentially, you know, cyber attacking us all the time, and they have breached the State Department and gotten into some sensitive areas and blah blah blah. So again, the rhetoric up against Russia. We've been talking about the potential of a false flag, of a cyber false flag, for months and months and months on this program, and you know, we're starting to see stuff like that happening now. So okay, a little bit of lightning round action here. Rahm Emanuel did in fact win re-election on Tuesday as the voters in Chicago's first mayoral runoff decided that despite his brisk management style, the former White House chief of staff was still best equipped to deal with the many dire challenges facing the nation's third largest city. I will not go much further than that. Just bear in mind that he does have dual citizenship with Israel. And okay. Also, Senator John McCain announced that he is running for Senate again. That's six times now. He will be running for his sixth term. John McCain will be 80 as of the election day in Arizona there. And please, for the love of everything holy, can we stop this? Is there something that we can do? I'm begging the people of Arizona, please do anything but put John McCain back in power. John, for the love of God, McCain does not need to be in public speaking about anything under any circumstances whatsoever. And he certainly doesn't need to be back in power for a sixth term. Why do we not have term limits in this country? I don't understand. Anyway, that's what's going on with John McCain. What else is going on? Okay, the second wave of unaccompanied illegal immigrant children has apparently begun, with more than 3,000 of them surging across the Mexico border into the United States last month. This is the highest rate since the peak of last summer's crisis, and a warning that another rough season is probably going to be ahead. Immigration officials warned that they are expecting another surge as the weather improves, and although the numbers are down some 40% compared to last year's frenetic pace that sparked the political crisis for the Obama administration, fiscal year 2015 is shaping up to mark the second biggest surge on record. So authorities report having captured 15,647 children traveling without parents who tried to jump the border in the first 6 months of the fiscal year. Through this point in 2014, they had apprehended 28,579. Just as worrisome is the rate of whole families, usually mothers with young children, who are crossing. So far this fiscal year, authorities have captured 13,911 family units, which is also down 30% from last year. These statistics show that the surge of illegal arrivals from Central America was never really over. And this is Jessica Vaughn, who is a policy studies director for the Center of Immigration Studies. Anyway, she also says that the Obama administration and Congress have not taken steps to end the pull factors. I would ask that she pulls her head out of her wherever it is, because we had that story the other day about the fact that there is an international logistics operation going on right now. Remember, we're talking about the fact that there are people in our country that have been here for 6 months, and they have been asked if they have or would like to bring people from, you know, I think it was, what was the three countries that we were talking about? It was Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, I think. And so, you know, this lady who's supposedly a policy studies director at the Center for Immigration Studies doesn't seem to be aware that there's a massive logistical program going on to actually reunite these supposed illegal minors with the parents or relatives or whoever it is already living in the United States. So, of course, that's not really the same thing as trying to limit the draw factor. That's pretty much incentivizing. I mean, it's like the opposite of limiting the draw factor. We're kind of giving them everything that they need to get here, including plane trips and stuff like that. So, I'm not anti-immigration, but I think it should be done effectively. And obviously, this is an agenda. It has major health implications across the country. It's got major cost implications because all of these kids are going to end up in your public schools. This is a big deal. It's a much bigger deal than I think people are paying attention to. And the fact that Obama basically came out with the Department of Homeland Health and Human Services, I think, is who he's working with. Was that Health and Human Services and the State Department working with that logistical program? I can't remember. I'd have to go back and look it up, but that's what's going on. Okay, it's also in Los Angeles right now. Politicians are seeking to ban homeless people from sleeping in their cars and in RVs. It's something called boondocking, which is something I would actually really like to try and do sometime, spend a little bit of time traveling around in an RV. But the city has tried a similar ban in the past, but it was rescinded because the wording in the law was too vague, apparently. But now the city council is back with a more specifically written law they hope will make it able to permanently prevent homeless people from sleeping in vehicles. And the city has also suggested selling permits to homeless people who would be able to attain the privilege of camping in their cars if they pay the local government off. Just absolutely disgusting. So I personally think there's a problem with putting people in jail for trying to perform life-sustaining functions, especially if there's no other place to do it. I don't know. Homelessness obviously right now is being criminalized all over America. We've had stories coming out of Fort Lauderdale about the 90-year-old gentleman who was feeding homeless people and got arrested, I think, 3 times for that. It's just the criminalization of homelessness is something that I just don't agree with at all. Oh man, we got to talk about this other story too. I don't know if you guys saw this video that came out. Holy cow. This white North Charleston police officer who shot the 50-year-old black man, Walter Scott, the other day. Did you guys see this video? This was absolutely insane. That came out. I don't even know what, I mean, this is murder. I mean, there's no, anyway, okay, so this white North Charleston police officer, he was arrested now on a murder charge after this video surfaced yesterday of the lawman shooting 8 times at this 50-year-old black man as this black man was running away. Walter Scott, who was a Coast Guard veteran, a father of 4, he died Saturday after Patrolman First Class Michael Slager, who was 33 years old, shot him in the back. 5 of the 8 bullets hit Scott, according to his family's attorney, and 4 of those struck his back, 1 in the ear. The footage was filmed by a bystander, which the Post and Courier obtained yesterday from a source who asked to remain anonymous, but it shows the end of a confrontation between the two on Saturday after Scott ran up from a traffic stop. So this was the first piece of evidence which contradicted the account Slager gave earlier in the week through his attorney. And the U.S. State Department and Department of Justice said in a statement that the FBI investigators would work with the state law enforcement division, which typically investigates officer-involved shootings in South Carolina, and the state's attorney general to examine any civil rights violation in Scott's death. So they are now going to prosecute this gentleman, the police officer, which is awesome, for murder, which carries charges between 30 years in life in prison. So just to go through this clip with you guys, I mean, this is as clear as day. There's no conjecture about what happened in this clip. I mean, this is absolutely exactly. True saw this video. The officer says he claimed that he was in fear for his life. That is absolutely the most ridiculous thing you could ever possibly take away from this video. It's a 3-minute clip, Saturday morning shooting. It starts a little shaky, but as Slager and Scott come into focus, they appear to be kind of grabbing at each other's hands, right? Slager has said through his attorney that Scott had tried to wrestle his taser away from him during the struggle, and the video appears to show Scott slapping at the officer's hands as several objects are falling to the ground. It's not clear in the video exactly what the officers, what the objects are. Scott starts running away, and wires from Slager's taser stretch from Scott's clothing all the way back to the officer's hands. When Scott is more than 10 feet away from Slager, the officer draws his service pistol, fires 7 times in rapid succession. After a brief pause, The officer fires one last time. Scott's back bows, and he falls face first onto the ground near a tree. After the gunfire, Slager glances over to the person who's taking the video and then appears to be talking on his radar. The cameraman obviously curses because it's basically witnessing a murder there. And Slager starts to yell, and there's at Scott, and you can hear sirens in the background as well. Slager's yelling at Scott to put your hands behind your back, so the officer is again yelling, you know, he's trying to cuff this guy, who essentially dies right there on the scene. Slager then jogs back to where he had fired his gun from, picks up something from the ground, and he walks back over to Scott's body and drops the object. Through the entire footage, it is not clear whether Scott ever had control of the taser or not, and at the time, he was only wanted for the arrest on a family court warrant. So Charleston County Sheriff mentioned this just yesterday. So he did have a history of arrests related to contempt of court charges for failing to pay child support. But the only accusation of violence against Scott during his entire lifetime came through an assault and battery charge back in 1987. This is a murder, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know how else to put it. This officer again saying he's in fear for his life. Scott, very, very clearly in the video, is not threatening the officer at this point when the officer pulls out his service revolver and fires 8 times into this guy's back. Just absolutely disgusting and deplorable behavior, but at least that officer is being arrested for murder, so I have to support that. Also got to give you guys your weekly Flocka update. Flocka is the new designer drug that's running rampant through Florida right now, and we're going to see more of this stuff, especially as the weather starts to improve. Flocka, F-L-A-K-K-A, I just like saying it, like, I don't know why. But a Florida man who stripped off his clothes and ran through Fort Lauderdale traffic to escape imaginary killers hot on his heels was high on Flocka, and the synthetic drug that appears poised to supplant bath salts as the leading cause of hallucinatory havoc, according to the cops' report. So following his apprehension, Matthew Kinney, who was 34, he told police that after smoking the synthetic drug, he began fleeing pursuers who had stolen his clothing and were intent on murdering him. Seen that night, Kinney explained that he would rather die than be caught by these unknown people. And this is, again, according to the Fort Lauderdale Police Department report. Officers found Kinney, who was naked except for his sneakers, running in traffic along Broward Boulevard early Saturday evening. And Kinney explained that if he got hit by a car, the unknown pursuers would probably stop chasing him. So, again, just putting it out there. Flocka, which can be smoked, snorted, or injected, is an amphetamine that can sell for as little as $5 a hit. But the high can come with some pretty serious side effects, including aggression, psychosis, and delirium. The street drug has triggered a series of bizarre events in Florida, which appears to be the tip of the Flocka spear. And in Fort Lauderdale alone this year, the man high on a drug was arrested after trying to break down the door of a police headquarters there in the city, while a second user impaled himself last month on a fence surrounding the headquarters. So it's two different people trying to break their way. See, they didn't say that the guy earlier in the other articles that he had impaled himself trying to break into police headquarters. So that's two different people trying to break into the police department high on Flocka. And I kind of wonder too if this has a lot to do with the alleged zombie attacks that were going on in Florida. Remember the naked dude biting people's faces off? If that's not Flocka, I will eat my beanie hat. That's what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, moving along, just trying to keep you guys up to date on the Flocka tip. Going over to the investment center right now, the Dow is currently up about 50 points, 17,928. S&P up also 2,076. The dollar index taking a little bit of a dip today, but not too much, 97 and 95. Let's go down and check out what gold is doing, taking a little bit of a pullback. Everything seems to be pretty flat right now, ladies and gentlemen. We're at 1204 on gold. Silver is still at $16.47 big pennies, which is just a little bit of a dip from yesterday. Hopefully Truth will be able to get us a little BDI, because again, my BDI feed is dead. I don't know. Maybe they're just not doing that anymore. Who knows? The euro up just a touch today at 108, and Bitcoin taking a little bit of a drop today, 243 and 31 pennies will get you a Bitcoin today. Let's check out what the oil is doing, $51.42, so a little bit of a pullback from high numbers yesterday. Not really sure what's going on there either. Truth coming through in the clutch here. BDI is down by 3 points today, sitting at 580. All right, perfect stuff. BDI, that's funny, Eric. Also, we had talked a lot about Greece. You know, they were, Tsipras was on his way to Moscow. I think he is actually in Moscow right now. Breaking news as of all of that stuff this morning is that Athens has, as of yet, not formally asked Moscow for any financial help to pay off its debts. And this is according to Russian President Vladimir Putin. He said he met with Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras in Moscow this morning. So no big swooping in to save Greece from Russia right now, or at least It stands that Greece has not asked Russia for any additional assistance right now. So again, we'll still see if anything goes on with that. And again, we also have the date later this week where this big, huge payment needs to be made from Greece to the IMF. A lot of people wondering how in the world that is going to happen. Let's talk a little bit too about the Asian Investment Infrastructure Bank. On Tuesday, this is yesterday, the Chinese Ministry of Finance said that Iran's application was backed by other founding members as of the Beijing Bank's bank. Blah, blah, blah. I'd like to buy a vowel here. So as of yesterday, Iran has been officially accepted as a founding member of the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. That's a pretty big deal, ladies and gentlemen. So 57 countries have now been seeking membership in the bank so far. 35 countries have been approved to join it. This Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank is the international finance institution proposed by the Chinese government. And the purpose of the Multilateral Development Bank is, of course, to provide finance to infrastructure projects in the Asian region. As of the 2nd of April, almost all Asian countries and most major countries outside of Asia had joined the AIIB, except for the United States, Japan, which dominates the ADB, and Canada. And as a side note, North Korea's application was rejected. So, Kim Jong must not have shown them how sweet his new haircut is. We got to talk about this too right now, because this story coming out of Bahrain I thought was very interesting yesterday. There's an American banker named Glenn Stewart. He worked apparently, according to him, as the chief house slave for the Saudi Arabia billionaire Ghosabi family for nearly three decades. And this was his speaking out to the New Yorker's Nicholas Schmiedel the other day. And what Stewart was actually doing there, so that cover story about being a chief house slave, not true. What he was actually doing was running a financial firm for the Ghosabi family. But in 2009, after the fall of Lehman Brothers, creditors demanded that the firm repay its loans. And what followed was the largest corporate default on record in the Middle East, fraud accusations and lawsuits against Stewart's firms in 10 different countries. And Stewart's eventual escape from Bahrain with the help of an ex-CIA operative. So Schmiedel detailed the order or the ordeal in which Stewart and his Ghosabi family partner, billionaire Mon El Sanay, are accused of stealing up to $10 billion and driving the bank they established to collapse. Stewart claims that he was tricked big time, which is not true, and that he really knows nothing about the cultural environment in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain, where he has lived for 27 years. And he told the New Yorker he's just hired help just way down on the food chain. But let me just preface this for just saying, I don't have a problem. I could get up today right now and I could drive to Topeka, Kansas, and I have a pretty good idea that I could pick up all the social mores and norms that I need to pick up in order to, you know, be okay over there. Bahrain isn't like that. You guys aren't just going to get on a boat and show up in Bahrain and pick up what's going on kind of like on the way. That's one of those places you're probably going to want to read about before you go so you don't, you know, end up dead. So the fact that this guy lived there for 27 years and says he's not really sure about the cultural environment in Bahrain, yeah, not quite so sure. So anyway, this Stewart guy was actually the CEO of this firm that ended up going bankrupt. He started out as an advisor to Sanay, who is an in-law of the Ghosabi's family who ran their in-house family bank. And later the two opened a private bank in Bahrain, which was still technically owned by the Ghosabi family, where they dealt both in regular finance and Islamic banking, which forbid selling debt and collecting interest. Stewart, who studied Arabic at Oxford, is reportedly an Islamic financial whiz, and more so than any of the Muslim Islamic bankers around. And there's the things. The bank they established, known as the International Banking Corporation, or TIBC, made its money by issuing bank loans. So the credit bureaus are pretty uncommon in the Gulf, but the TIBC was able to borrow against its own loans based on the prestige of the Ghosabi family name, even though the bank's books were sketchy and really only one loan on record had ever been repaid. So in 2009, after the fall of Lehman Brothers, creditors demanded that the TIBC repaid its loans. The bank, of course, couldn't call it its own loans because they were fake, so it eventually collapsed, marking the largest corporate default on record again in the Middle East. And after that, things got a little messy for Stewart. He moved his wife and kids back to California, but then the Ghosabis launched a lawsuit and Bahrain imposed travel bans on him. He was interrogated and arrested, but later let out on bail. He decided to make a break for it. And in 2010, he hired an ex-CIA officer to smuggle him out of the country in a bolted secret compartment on a 34-foot cabin cruiser en route to Iraq. And now Stewart apparently lives in California and is pursuing literary projects, including writing his own memoir. Seems like a great job if you can get it. Imagine that, CIA helping him escape from Bahrain. you kind of have to wonder where all of the loans went, and maybe he was working with them the whole time. I just wonder. But anyway, I just thought that was kind of a crazy story. Largest corporate bankruptcy in Middle Eastern history, going down in Bahrain, and then the guy being squirreled out of the country by the CIA, and nothing seems to have happened to him, because the Gosabis, basically, they were going to sue him, but they realized they'd be outing themselves at the same time. So the guy basically went, you know, foreclosed on a $10 billion bank, and then ran off to California with the help of the CIA. It is totally just fine. So that's what's going on there. Good times. Man, I wish I could get involved with more corruption. Seems like a great way to make a living, doesn't it? Samsung, also, just as a side note in an investment standpoint, they are going to be reporting a 31% decline in earnings from this same period last year. So that is important to think about as well. What else is going on? I don't have time to go through all of that right now. Okay. Oh, let's talk about a little health news here since we had such a great show. I got to give you this Chantix. Chantix is going to be getting a new health warning on their box. Chantix is a very popular anti-smoking or smoking cessation drug, right? Chantix, the owner of Chantix, which I think it, what's the name of, let's see, yeah, it's Pfizer, I think, that produces Chantix. They actually went to the FDA and asked them to remove the black box warning. And in a really rare event, the FDA came back and said, not only are we going to remove, or not only are we not going to remove your black box warning, we're going to expand it, because it turns out that crap you guys are peddling is so much worse than what we even have to say. You know, they're going to expand the note now to include the fact that the drug has been reduced to alcohol tolerance leading to seizures, or reduced alcohol tolerance that leads to seizures. So, although the FDA stands by the effectiveness of the drug, which initial studies have showed to help about 33% of patients remain tobacco-free for 6 months after quitting, compared with 14% of patients placed on a placebo. But the concerns about the drug's safety surfaced almost immediately as soon as the drugs hit the market. Anyway, they're going to expand this whole thing. There's so much more in this article about this, and I don't have time to get through it all right now. But essentially, if you're taking Chantix, don't. It's really, really bad for you. And they're talking about now, again, expanding this black box warning on the side of the Chantix, because they are just that bad. Ooh, I'll tell you what. We're getting ready to go to this break, and when we come back, Ellie Marzulli is going to be joining us, so I'm not going to be able to get through all this stuff. There's a fantastic article at Red Pill Reports right now, if you go to the show section page, about meditation, 5 tips to help people who want to get into meditation do it more effectively. So newbie tips for meditating. I can't get through it all right now, but it is a really good article, and it is there in the show section at redpillreports.com. Really appreciate you guys sharing that page with your friends, and also sharing the show with your friends too. I can't tell you guys how nice it is to see the listenership blossoming, and I'm sure has a lot to do with the fact that we get these crazy great guests like L.A. Marzulli on. So now is the time, guys. Get your friends and family around, because this is going to be a great conversation with L.A. We will be right back. 3-minute break, guys. Keep it right here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup, or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR. Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
No hate, no hype, no fear. We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you guys all for being with us here on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today. This is it, guys. We are at the hour that all of you guys have been waiting for. I know the people in the chat room have been clamoring to hear from Mr. L.A. Marzulli, and it's an absolute distinct honor to be welcoming him back to the program today. For those of you guys who don't know L.A. Marzulli, I got to give you a heads up, one of the most fascinating and interesting men on the planet, ladies and gentlemen, about as close to a real-life Indiana Jones as we can possibly get. He is an author, a lecturer, a world traveler, an explorer, a filmmaker. We already said writer, though I called that an author, but he's penned 8 books about the Nephilim trilogy. And the Nephilim, of course, are what we consider to be the fallen angels, or the fallen people, the watchers in the Bible there. So he has got so much information on his websites. I cannot recommend going to lamarzulli.net enough. He also does a program on Acceleration Radio every Thursday night at 6 p.m. Pacific. He also has a fantastic blog, which you can find if you go to lamarzulli.net, go to the blog link, you'll get right over to it. It's a little easier than looking for it on the internet. But he's also teamed up with Richard Shaw to create the Watchers series, and there are now 8 DVDs out in the Watchers series. I highly, highly recommend these DVDs, ladies and gentlemen. They are very well produced and certainly very fascinating stuff. The diversity of information. I got to tell you, L.A., you really kind of cross a lot of barriers in your work, sir, and it's very, very interesting. I want to kind of start right there with you today. First of all, L.A., thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to join us on the program today.
Well, the pleasure is mine, J.D. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime that you're available, we'll have you on, sir. I want to talk a little bit because, you know, your research and your totality of the things that you have accomplished in your life are astounding. I mean, your resume at this point is fairly intimidating. And because we are a newer show, we've only been on the air for about 5 months, and because we get to talk to wonderful people like you, our listeners has just blossomed. And I know there are people out there who may not know anything about you. And I wonder if maybe we could start there. Just kind of give us the 411 on how you got so invested in all of this unusual information and research, and talk a little bit from the standpoint of you calling yourself a Frank supernaturalist. What do you mean by that? And how does that relate to everything that you've done so far with your life, sir?
Well, I was a Frank supernaturalist before I became a born again Christian. And that's 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I was involved, I was raised Catholic, and I left the church at 13. I read a book by Eric von Däniken, Chariots of the Gods, which changed my life back then. Now, you know, that was, That's the basis for the Ancient Aliens series on the History Channel, mm-hmm. which I completely don't agree with. But
right.
remember, I was 16 years old, 17 years old, somewhere in that time frame, and I began to read a lot of occult books, Carlos Castaneda. This was the 60s, the Beatles, you know, gurus and Eastern mysticism and Eastern meditation and all this stuff was coming over from India. It was one of the greatest occult explosions that we've ever seen in the West. And of course it challenged Christianity. And because there was no Jesus movement on the East Coast where I was. And so the churches for the most part were very, very dry, very dead. The Chuck Smith Calvary Chapel Jesus movement, which started in the 60s, hadn't happened yet. So I'm like, you know, immersed in all this occult, and I'm a young kid. I'm like 16 to 20,
right
in that window. Very impressionable. And I could talk hours about that, but I experienced stuff. I went to Silver Mind Control and passed their test. That's when they hand you a card, you have to go, you go down into your level. And this is like dealing with spirit guides, which of course is an absolute no-no. But at the time I didn't know this.
Okay.
And you use your spirit guides to go down and diagnose the person. And that's how you have to pass the test. They don't tell you anything. They just give you a name. And you've got to go down and you've got to see them. And your spirit guides come in and tell you what's wrong with the person. That's how you diagnose them.
And that was something you were exposed to, actually doing stuff like that when you were young?
Absolutely. I went to the course and passed the course.
Oh my God. I've never even heard of that before.
Yeah. I wound up with Guru Maharaji for 3.5 years, roughly. And after that, look, with the Guru Maharaji again, the techniques, the meditation techniques, they open up the chakras, the energy centers in a person and a human being. But what they're doing is the same old lie that we've heard from the garden. You'll be as gods. It's the same old nonsense. And it never really deals with the heart of the matter, which is man's sin. It never ever gets to that. Now, you know, 35, or actually more than that, 40 years ago, I'm dating myself here, 40 years ago, I wouldn't be able to articulate that in Christian terms. My third eye was open. I saw divine light. I heard what would they call divine music. I tasted, you know, divine nectar, all this stuff. And it's all real. I mean, I watched a Mahatma, which means a holy man. I watched the Mahatma bilocate, right in front of me, right in front of me to 100 yards down the beach in an instant, in
what?
A flash of an eye. Oh yeah. All this stuff is real. They tap into power. Question is, where is the source of the power? What are you looking at? Where is the source of it? And the source, in my opinion, is all demonic. It's all from the dark side. All of it's been sourced that way. And nothing is new. The gurus know it. The shamans on the Navajo Indian reservation know it. When they shapeshift into wolfmen. And that's what they become. They become what is known as skinwalkers. And you're not even supposed to say the word, but that's what they become. And it's real. It's not, they actually take on the form and become like a dog man or a werewolf, for lack of a better word. That's what they become. I've talked to people who have encountered them, who have seen them one-on-one. So it's not mythos. And all this is sourced, of course, from the dark side. When I was going through this with the guru, one night I awakened about 2:30 in the morning, and I went out into the large room that we had set aside for devotions and meditation, which would seat easily a couple hundred people. And I prostrated myself in front of the dais where there was a chair, with a candle burning, and there was always all these wreaths there of flowers and offerings in case the guru showed up, right?
Okay.
It was there perpetually. And I prostrated myself in front of the picture and wept bitterly because for the last 2.5 years of my life, I had become a renunciate. A celibate person. I, you know, completely given my life over to the guru, which is why I was down in Houston with the Guru's Brothers Orchestra doing all this stuff and playing in the orchestra. But I had given my life completely over to him and believed that he was God. And yet here I am at 2:30 in the morning weeping bitterly. And this is the reason why I was weeping bitterly. Now, I couldn't articulate it in Christian terms then, but I was weeping because my basic human nature, who I was, had not changed an iota. In other words, the sin that I was burdened down with was not expunged, was not cleansed from me. I wasn't clear of it. You could also say that had I not become born again 6 years later, 7 years later, I certainly, like many people, will die in your sin. I would have died in my sin. I would have died there. Billy Graham just gets right in your face and tells you what it is. Everybody on this planet, I don't care who you are, needs a savior. You might not believe it. You might think it's a crutch. You might laugh at it. You might look at the church and say, what a bunch of hypocrites. The bottom line is all those things are broken. But the savior of mankind, Yeshua, Jesus, offers us eternal life and salvation through his blood atonement on Calvary. And that, my friend, is a week long conversation. It really right. is. Mm-hmm. Because the depth of that just, there's no end to it. But I became born again 35 years ago and, everything in my life changed at that time. But being immersed in the occult, when I became born again, the dark forces of hell did not want me to leave their clutches. And so there was a real battle there.
Really?
For almost 3 years. And, about 10 years into my walk when I was 40 years old is when I began the ministry that I've been doing now for the last 25 years. And it's really blossomed in the last 8. My mentor would be Dr. I.D.E. Thomas, who passed away in 2013. His book, The Omega Conspiracy, which talks about the Genesis 6 passage, the fallen angelic host of heaven coming down to earth, having sex with the women of the earth and creating a hybrid being known as the Nephilim, was my mentor. I received an honorary doctorate from Dr. I.D.E. Thomas in 2003. And more recently, in 2014, last year, I received the Gold Medallion Award from Quinine Institute, which was a real huge honor by Chuck Missler. So that was just incredible for me to receive that. It was a real, real banner day. Both days, 2003, where Dr. I.D.E. Thomas gave me my honorary doctorate and of course the gold medallion, which in some ways is the second honorary doctorate. I mean, it's very, very hard to get. So to receive those awards from men who I consider, elder brothers, mentors, I cut my teeth on Chuck Missler. Years ago, I would rush to the radio every day at 4 o'clock in Southern California and listen to 6640 Chuck's program, with just, you know, and be sort of angry that it was over too quickly, you know,
right.
That type of thing. So that's just a bit about, you know, where my background is. I am a frank supernaturalist. When we look at the Bible and we see the stories that are there, we talk about virgin birds, floating axe heads, talking donkeys, two gold coins that appear out of the mouths of a fish, men that walk on water, water that's changed into wine, you know, water that is stood up as a heap where millions of people pass through it, staffs that turn into snakes. I mean, the list is endless. And the Bible, which is what Christians believe in, is a supernatural guidebook. It's a guidebook to the supernatural is really what it is. And it talks about the cosmic chess match, this heavenly war that we've been involved in literally for millennia, which continues even into the present day. And certainly when we look at what's going on a global level with the rebirth of a nation of Israel and the rise of anti-Semitism, the rise of earthquakes and floods and everything that Jesus points to that would signal the time of the end, the wars and rumors of wars, famines, pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places and troublesome times, surely we can agree that it's not business as usual, that we're in a window of time unlike any other. And, of course, that's why I write the books I write. That's why we're doing the Watchers series. We've got 8 of those right now. We've got a special that's going to be up on my website, lamarzulli.net, on Friday. It's all eight Watchers, all 8 in an 8 DVD pack. So it's in one case, all 8 Watchers, plus further evidence, which is a fascinating book about UFOs and the whole UFO phenomenon, for free, a calendar, and, of course, a one-month subscription, trial subscription to our news magazine. It's $190 value for $99. So it's like we just want to get the information out there. It's a great deal. And if you're interested in that, It's lamarzulli.net.
And I was going to say, I mean, these videos are so well produced. You and Richard Shaw did such a great job. I mean, this isn't like, you know, like your standard YouTube stuff. These are like 1080. I mean, really, really great and long. They're not just short, you know, little 40-minute documentaries. They're full length, you know, really, really, really impressive information. And I definitely would love to chat with you about some of the stuff. I know you've got some kind of newer stuff that's going on with the new stuff, and I don't want to make you disclose anything on the air, but, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, this isn't somebody who is, has just written a book and is sitting back. This is somebody who is still actively involved with doing investigation and doing research and is still trying to bring new and important information to the forefront all the time. And that's why I love having LA on the show, because again, too, understanding that your background comes out of a really strong occult background and then basically being able to break away from that and then getting into the, you know, the Christian side of things, that really gives you a very unique perspective on all of the things that you're running across nowadays, doesn't it? I mean, I wouldn't imagine that there'd be a lot of people out there who were both born again and also have, you know, a really solid understanding of the occult as well.
Well, and that's true. There are a few of us out here that are doing this, but there's not many of us.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully I would bring a unique perspective to really what's going on.
Well, good, because I have a lot of questions about what's going on, and I'm gonna pause you because I have to ask a question from the chat room really quick. Just given your experience with the occult, you had mentioned meditation as kind of being dangerous. Do you feel like meditation and yoga both are strictly no-nos, or is there a way to do those things safely, what are your thoughts on those two practices, sir?
Absolutely, what you're doing, they are, all these techniques are techniques to awaken the Kundalini serpent spirit within a person, run to the nearest exit.
Really? Okay. Okay. And again, you know, everybody is entitled to their opinion, so I don't want anybody arguing in the chat room, whatever, but you know, everybody has an opinion, and that's why we bring people onto the program, because that's important. And again, if that's a safety thing, if there's something going on there, I'll tell you, LA, I've been paying a lot of attention to, this battle of good and evil, brother. I'll tell you what, man. I was fuzzy on it for a long time. You know, you and I have been speaking for about a year now, and you've kind of brought me over the hump here a little bit. But, you know, we've got people who come on the show like Jamie Hanshaw, who talks about the public displays of these rituals that are going on, right? Like,
sure.
Katy Perry bringing the devil up at the Grammys, essentially. We also talk a lot about frequency and intention and things like that. But one of the things that has come across my radar recently was this I Pet Goat video. I'm not sure if you saw that thing, but it was basically a 10-minute video, and to me it really outlined how, if there was, say, an evil force that was locked away because of what happened with Jesus, you know, basically binding him in the underworld, that there are actively people out there and forces out there that are trying to bring that spirit back, the spirit of the Antichrist, and they are doing it by using these displays of ritual on TV. And then really fundamentally, I am concerned about CERN, my friend. Have you been paying any attention to what those crazy people are doing at CERN right now, and how does all that relate in your opinion?
Well, the whole thing with CERN is very, very interesting, because it makes you wonder what's really going on there. Are they trying to open up or trying to get into another dimension? Is that what's really going on? Are they trying to bring something in?
Yes.
Another dimension? Are they trying, you know, what are they really doing here? And of course, you know, it's like NASA, never a straight answer. You get all these tap dancing around this thing, and the public, it's amazing. These guys are doing stuff, and you know, the average Joe on the street has no clue.
Exactly.
And these guys aren't going to tell you if they do something that's bizarre, or they find something that's bizarre. I mean, they're certainly not going to, well, yesterday we had an entity appear in the CERN laboratory.
Right.
They're not going to say anything like that. It's just not going to happen. Look, the world right now is in a very precarious place, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is. And what we're seeing, we're seeing a ramping up. Things are accelerating. That's why I call my radio show Acceleration Radio.
Okay.
Acceleration TV. Things are accelerating. Events are accelerating towards some sort of a climax. And I think the climax is in the not too distant future. I think that we are going to see the revealing of the so-called extraterrestrial presence. I think that we're going to see either dirty nukes employed someplace or a live nuke employed someplace, you know, deployed someplace on the planet. I think we might be looking at volcanic activity, which could be literally game-changing, nuclear winter time. We are already looking at one of the worst droughts in the history of the state of California, where, and I just love this, you know, this is the idiot, that, with all due respect to Mr. Brown, that we have as a governor. He's had years to figure out that, okay, you know, we're, the drought's ongoing, it's not getting any better. Maybe we should be proactive instead of building a billion-dollar railway system to nowhere.
Right.
Right? Maybe we should invest some of that money in desalinization plants. Whoa!
Oh, what a concept.
Whoa! Kind of like the Israelis do, you know, over there.
And Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia's got the largest desalination plant on the planet.
You would think, with the entire Pacific Ocean sitting right off the coast. So what does Jerry Brown do? Well, we're going to have smart meters, and we're going to regulate the water, and there's going to be hefty fines for people taking long showers. That's his answer.
$500 a day is what they're saying. $500 a day.
It is absolute nonsense. And it shows you how inept and lame government is. Cool. All we can think about is this stupid railway to nowhere, which no one wants, instead of really doing something for the people. And what does he do? He punishes people instead is typical. We're going to set up a police force. It's like there was an article on Drudge Report yesterday. We're going to legislate no squirt guns within 150 feet of the school. It's like, what?
That seems like a plausible use of our elected officials' time, doesn't it? To be outlawing it really squirt does. Guns.
There you go. There you go. Money well spent, sir. Very good law. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. And so here we are. We're in a major drought in California, and you just would have thought that maybe somebody would have had the foresight. 2 or 3 years ago, I was harping about the drought in California.
Mm-hmm.
And surely a guy like Brown has got climatologists who were coming to him going, well, it's not looking any better, but snowpack's down. Maybe we should think of something, you know, other than what we're doing. And desalinization plants could have been built perhaps in 2 or 3 years. Who knows?
There's no solution. Well, we've got Deborah Tavares coming on all the time talking about the existence of primary water too, which I know is a kind of a sidetrack, but there's plenty of water out there. My fear is that we're going to see a mass exodus of Californians. And I was reading some articles this morning talking about some of the afflicted areas, and they're talking about Riverside and Hemet, you know, places where I know I've got a lot of friends out there, and they're talking about 35%, you know, restrictions on water in places like Hemet. They can't survive there like that. That's a desert. That they're not meant to have 40 million people living in California, you know. So,
well, and that's the other thing. I mean, it was never supposed to be that. I mean, look, the 101 freeway, and this is like we're way off, but who cares? The 101 freeway, when I first got here 40 years ago, was problematic. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, now, and I live on the north end. I mean, way out there. I'm like an hour outside of LA in the Santa Monica Mountains. And now when I go down to the 101, and even if I try to go north on it away from Los Angeles, oftentimes traffic is backed up. So yeah, there's way too many people living here, and everybody takes showers and everybody flushes their stupid toilet a million times a day.
Right.
And, you know, we're in deep doo-doo. And by the way, a tag team onto this on Friday, Good Friday, last Friday, they were spraying chemtrails over Southern California like you wouldn't believe. I've got pictures of it.
Right.
People go, oh, LA, that's just not, they are not spraying chemtrails. Oh, yes,
oh,
they are.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And it rained like crazy yesterday.
Right.
I mean, there was nothing in the forecast at all last week. And so they got up there and they sprayed the heck out of the sky. And of course, yesterday we had this major rainstorm.
Mm-hmm.
So is it geoengineering? In my opinion, yeah, it is.
Of course it is. We used to make it rain a foot a week or a foot an hour on the Ho Chi Minh Trail back in the day. I mean, that's the thing is if people go out and they research, you know, chemtrails, and you do a search for chemtrails, it's going to take you to bad information sites where they tell you it doesn't exist. But I guarantee you, if you look for bacterial or chemical ice nucleation, you'll find companies that want to sell you that can say, yeah, come to our little place here in Montana. And we'll be more than happy to seed your clouds and make it rain for you. So you got to wonder why we're not doing that in California, or if there is even more of an orchestrated going on trying to keep water from California using stuff like HARP or, you know, who knows what the capability of these people are really nowadays. But the motivation doesn't seem to be altruistic in any form anymore. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It's crazy. Well, okay, so we're in a pickle right now. I wonder if we could, just for a minute, well, we're getting ready to come to a break, so I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent here, but, you know, there are probably people out there right now, LA, who are very young, and they're staring at their smartphones right now, who think, oh, these guys are talking about history, and history is stupid, and it doesn't really exist anymore. What do we say to people like that, who just don't seem to understand that history is still living and going on around us all the time, LA?
Well, I mean, there's a famous quote, if we don't learn from the past, you know, we're doomed to make the same mistakes in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So history is incredibly important. And in order to understand where we are in modernity in the present day, one must have some sort of a grasp on history. And granted, you know, people also will say that, you know, the history is written by the victors. And that is true to a certain extent. But for instance, in the Middle East, most people don't understand that the modern day countries, and this is where history is very applicable in you know, in the worldview that a person will basically present himself to the world with. Look, at the end of World War I, the modern nations of Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, which became Israel, Jordan, and Iraq, were created out of what was then the Ottoman Empire.
Okay.
Most people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you go to an average kid out of high school or even a kid out of college, they don't understand that. And without an understanding of that, we don't understand what's going on in the Middle East. And let's face it, the Middle East is the hotbed.
It's ground zero, man.
It is ground zero mm-hmm. all day long. Mm-hmm. So without that knowledge, it's very easy to go, oh, the Palestinians, oh, the poor Palestinians, oh, blah, 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 blah. But remember, all those nations that I just spoke about were created by the Brits and the French at the end of World War I when the Ottoman Turks lost the war because they sided with Germany. So the Brits and the French came in and they carved up the Ottoman Empire. And this is the whole reason, you see, when you get into ISIL or ISIS with the caliphate, this is what they're going back to.
That's right.
So without a knowledge of history on some level, all this is meaningless to people. People mm-hmm. have no idea of really what the nexus of the current political situation that we see in the Middle East is all about.
I agree. And you know, part of that too is that we've had so much of it suppressed from us. You know, there aren't people, you're not going to go to high school and just happen to find out that they're finding elongated skulls down in Paracas or that they could trace, you know, that movement across Central and South America. You know, a lot of the things that you do as well, like just even, you know, a few months ago with the removal of the alien artifact from the guy's knee there, that's history. As soon as that happens, that moves into history, and we're already start talking about things that are actually going on that are coming to a nexus as this spiritual battle, I think, continues to be waged. And I totally agree this Middle East situation is really the hotbed right now. We've got to go to a 3-minute break. Appreciate all you guys hanging out in there in the chat room. If you guys have questions for LA, please stick them in there, and I'll try and weave them into the tapestry of this interview. We've got a 3-minute break. We'll be right back for the final segment with our guest, LA Marzulli. Please go to lamarzulli.net, and I would really highly recommend hopping on that special that he offered with the entire 8-box DVD set plus a calendar for $100. You're not going to go wrong with that, ladies and gentlemen. These are fantastic movies. We will see you guys in just 3 minutes. Keep it here, guys.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, T.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah. I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the Iodine Now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods, but what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy 3 or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Saturdays and Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We're moving into the second segment with our very special guest today, Mr. L.A. Marzulli. And L.A., I have a whole list of questions here for you, but I have to be honest, when I was speaking with you just about history here in the last second, my main goal in life right now is to try and encourage people to get involved, to explain to them that we are in fact surrounded by wonder all the time, and that if you sit around staring at your cell phone all day, you're going to miss it. You're going to miss all of it. So I really do want to inspire people to kind of get involved. And one of the little stories that I just happened to mention was the story of you being involved with that medical team who pulled essentially the alien implant out from behind the guy's knee. And essentially the chat room erupted because there are a lot of people in here apparently who have not heard that story. So would you mind just kind of going into that briefly for us for a second, sir? Because I really find this to be incredibly fascinating.
Well, it was. And the backstory on that is this. The man we call Bill was abducted when he was 5 years old. He's been abducted multiple times, but at 5 is when he remembers being taken. And the first time they showed up, he fought them. And they retreated. The second time, he wasn't so lucky. He went right up through the ceiling. And we hear that from many, many people. In other words, these entities, are operating and are able to manipulate space, matter, time, and energy in ways that we just don't understand.
Right.
Don't understand at all. And he was implanted. That's an interesting thing. And I remember when I first got into this, the whole implant thing about 15 years ago with the late Dr. Roger Lear, who, by the way, is in all the Watchers DVDs, people laughed at us. And they said, oh, that's just nonsense. It's just an old childhood injury. They're not implanting. This is all.
Got shot with a BB gun or something, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Bill came to us, and Dr. Roger Lear, at this was his 17th and last implant surgery. And he had a whole protocol, which was in place, that Bill, of course, had to go through. And the first thing is an x-ray. Real cheap, real simple to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get an x-ray and see what's there. Sure enough, there's a metallic implant, excuse me, underneath the man's leg. Well, we took a Gauss meter. A Gauss meter measures the magnetic field this little implant about the size of the end of a pencil lead was registering 8.0 to 8.5 milligauss on a gauss meter. Richard Shaw's fully charged battery in his camera was registering 10.0.
Wow.
So here he got this little deal, excuse me, little implant on this guy's leg, measuring 8.0 to 8.5 milligauss on a gauss meter. What are we looking at? It also gave out a radio frequency of about 330 hertz. We then took him and did a CAT scan. Sure enough, you have a metallic object in your leg.
Mm-hmm.
Then we took him to the surgeon and we put him into an ultrasound machine where you take a wand, that's hooked to a machine, squirt some of this gel on it, and the wand shows what's right underneath the skin, which is incredible. Sure enough, within a minute or two, well, you got something there. So we'll take it out in 2 weeks. So all the tests that we did, oh, including a stud finder, by the way, there's a metallic object in the guy's leg.
Right.
And it's giving off a radio frequency and it's showing, a magnetic field of 8.0 milligauss. You know, what is this thing?
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's interest were piqued. 2 weeks later, we're in the operating theater. Dr. Roger Lear is there. Dr. Matriciano is there, who is the head surgeon. Dr. Lear is assisting. We've got a nurse. We've got three camera crews. We've got about 10 to 15 people in the other room who are observing all this on an HD monitor. Richard Shaw is there. I'm there, of course. There's a whole bunch of people running around. It's a big production for us. Let me get a hit of water here.
Okie dokie.
And Dr. Matriciana takes the x-ray, makes a little black dot on the guy's leg corresponding to where the implant or the metallic object is on the x-ray, takes the gel, squirts the gel on the guy's leg, and for the next hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes, goes over the guy's leg and can't find anything. It's like the implant is being cloaked.
Right.
We can't find it. And after an hour and 20 minutes, he turns to Dr. Lear and goes, maybe we should get another x-ray. And Dr. Lear goes, no, I know it's there. We know it's there. We saw it here. And so something's on. And at that moment, I get the little tap on the shoulder from the Spirit of a Living God. Now, look, as a born-again Christian, this is how we're supposed to move. And the things of the Spirit, we're supposed to be listening and understand. And this takes practice over years. When the Spirit of a Living God taps us on the shoulder, mind the checks. What is he trying to tell us?
Mm-hmm.
And I know his voice. And, you know, what I got was, you need to pray and you need to pray now. And so without waiting for permission, I spoke to the group. I said, guys, it's going to sound a little weird, but I'm going to pray and I'm going to do it now. There was no asking for permission. I just launched into a prayer, and the prayer was very simple. It was something like this. Father, if there are forces which are cloaking this device, I pray that you would break their power and do it soon. Well, that's what I said.
Uh-huh.
Room full of people. And less than 2 minutes later, JD, 2 minutes later, all of a sudden the object appears on the ultrasound monitor and everybody goes, whoa, what is that? And Dr. Matriciana takes the wand on and off, looking at it, rubbing it, trying to understand what's wrong with my, you know, why is...
right, what's wrong with my equipment?
what's going on here?
Yeah.
2 days later, and of course we extracted the implant, 2 days later in Seal Lab, which is the last time I saw Dr. Roger Lear, he passed away about a month and a half after that, 2 months after that. And I said, Dr. Lear, I took him outside. It was a one-on-one conversation. I said, I hope you realize what happened in that operating theater. And he looked at me, his eyes got real big, and he said, L.A., I now believe that there's a supernatural component to the UFO phenomena and the abduction phenomena, and I'm going to tell Whitley Strieber about it. And so the bottom line is, and this is all documented in Watchers 7 and Watchers 8.
Yep.
It is absolutely phenomenal. And Watchers 7 actually won the, what is the name of the award? It won the EBE Film Festival Award in Phoenix, People's Choice and Best Film of the Year in 2014. So we were really excited about that. But the bottom line is, he was going to talk to Whitley Strieber about it. It changed his paradigm.
Right.
And for Dr. Lear to say something like that to us was groundbreaking. It was high strangeness in that room, JD. They, supernatural forces from the dark side knew exactly what we were up to. And they were going to do everything in their power to see that we weren't successful.
Mm-hmm.
And when I prayed, I called upon a power greater than they are. Greater is he that is in me than him that is in the world, right?
Right.
From scripture. And the Lord of the universe, the God of the universe, the true God of the universe showed up. How he did it, whether he sent his angels, I don't know what he did, but what he showed up. And we experienced supernatural warfare 2.0, spiritual warfare 2.0. And the God of the universe changed the atmosphere, and we were able to extract the implant. All that is in Watchers 7 and Watchers 8.
What was the result of the investigation into the implant after you guys had pulled it out? Do you think it was some sort of like RFID chip, you know, maybe put in? Or what would the motivation be for aliens to implant us, in your opinion?
I think it's a DNA changer. I think these implants are a prototype of what is coming.
Right.
When it talks about the mark of the beast, I think that this – look, and this ties right into the whole Darwinian paradigm. Darwinism really offers us no explanation as to how we got here.
It's very detrimental, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, I don't believe in the Darwinian paradigm at all.
Right.
But it sets up an intellectual vacuum in a person and also a spiritual vacuum. Where are our origins? Where do we come from? And I've talked about this numerous times, and I'll do it again. When Ben Stein sits down with Richard Dawkins, who's one of the premier evolutionists of the 20th and 21st centuries, and ask him, Richard, where did life come from? Where did the first self-replicating molecule, how was that created? And Dawkins, of course, has no idea.
Mm-hmm.
He says, and he's right, nor does anyone else. And I get that. No one knows how any of this began. And so Stein throws him sort of an intellectual lifeline and says, well, how might have started in your opinion? And Dawkins answers, well, it could have come about, I suppose, in this manner. And he points to the extraterrestrial, which is someone living on another planet, who evolved to a very high state of civilization through some sort of Darwinian process, who then created us and seeded us through the galaxy, and we wound up on Earth, and voila. That's called panspermia. That is exactly what the ancient astronaut theorists who talk about this incessantly on the Ancient Aliens program believe,
mm-hmm.
that ancient aliens were here. They manipulated our DNA. They started the world's earliest civilizations and religions, and now at this critical juncture in human history, they, E.T., are back to usher us into a time of peace, prosperity, and knowledge. And one of the things that they will do when E.T. shows up in mile-wide craft, and you can scoff and laugh all you want, I really don't care at this point. The UFO phenomenon has been recognized by the U.K.,
mm-hmm.
by the French, by the Germans, by the Belgium, people in Belgium, the Japanese.
Well, look at, what was it, wasn't it Leon Panetta, who was one of the top senior advisors? He left,
there,
and they asked him after his whole career, what was your number one thing that you wish?
Number one deal?
Didn't disclose UFOs. I mean, seriously, after that guy's career, of all the things that he could have said, that was a shocker.
I mean, go figure. That's called soft disclosure.
Right.
That's exactly what it is. And so, isn't it interesting that all this is coming down? When they show up, they will tell us that they created us and did all the things that I said, but also they will give us two things, free energy, the energy that pilots the craft, and they will completely change the world that way.
Uh-huh.
And they will also say, hey, we have a DNA upgrade for the human race. And all you need to do is take this little chip, this little implant, and it will change your DNA. The man that we took it out of had experienced some interesting phenomena in his life. Since the implant was removed, he lost a bunch of weight in the first 6 months, and he's noticed that he's becoming prone to sickness and aches and pains where he didn't notice them before.
Right.
So, look, is this little implant some sort of a DNA changer? We don't know. In some ways, it may be similar to, and this is an analogy that Stanton Friedman used. That if you put a nuclear submarine in Columbus's day, they'd have no idea what any of it is. Well, when we looked at this implant underneath a scanning electron microscope, we have no idea what this implant is.
Right.
None at all.
Well, you know, part of the problem that I would have too regarding this is that obviously the guy that you pulled that out of, he wasn't given a choice. You know, he didn't get the opportunity to say, yes, I will accept your chip.
Correct.
And we also have this situation now. We've talked to Deborah Tavares quite a bit about, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is moving to this aerosol disbursement method. And, you know, it just seems to me like if I was the guy running the show or the people running the show, I would try and do everything as clandestinely as possible. And I'm just, I'm really concerned that they're going to try and do some sort of chipping without us even knowing it, just, you know, dispersed through chemtrails or something like that. You know, is there any indication in your mind that they have to give us a choice, or are we at a point now where everything could be clandestine, we could all be implanted and no one would ever really know, and then there you are, you know?
Well, look, what's interesting about all this is that we know from the Bible, from the prophecy that's there, that in the end times, people will be forced to take this mark. They will have to take a mark. You won't be able to buy, sell, or trade without it.
Right.
And that, go back 150 years ago, JD, and that was absurd. Well, the Bible, I mean, how are they going to do that, Ellie? That's just absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
Right? There you have it. And what we see is that we're in an era where all this is already happening with the RFID chip.
Mm-hmm.
But as I've written about in the Cosmic Chess Match, and I talk about this incessantly in my lectures, that this mark is something completely different. Because anyone who takes the mark winds up on a lake of fire. There's no grace and mercy. And I make a case and put forth the idea that the only time this kind of a judgment comes down where there is no grace and mercy shown is with the Nephilim.
Okay.
In Genesis 6, in Numbers 13, and later on when Joshua and Caleb are given the mandate to wipe out the Nephilim tribes, which are in the promised land, to Sodom and Gomorrah, who go after strange flesh. And it says a lot, the angels who gave up their first estate in similar manner, Sodom and Gomorrah, there's a link between those two linguistically. We see the judgment of Noah's flood. We see the judgment of the Tower of Babel when Nimrod becomes Geborim, Nephilim. We see the judgment in Sodom and Gomorrah. We see the judgment without any grace and mercy meted out to the Nephilim tribes who are in the Levant or the Promised Land.
Right.
And then later on, anyone who takes that mark becomes, in my opinion, it's a DNA changer. You will become, and this is why you wind up in the lake of fire. You're no longer human. Your DNA will change. Now that's conjecture. But what's interesting is a colleague and friend of mine, Douglas Hamp, arrived at the same conclusion in his groundbreaking book, Corrupting the Image.
Uh-huh.
That's the title of his book. I wrote about it in my book, The Cosmic Chess Match. Both books were published within several weeks of each other.
Wow.
We arrived at the same conclusion independently.
Right.
With no collusion between us.
Now, LA, are you aware that Monsanto currently has a patent on any animals that have eaten part, some of their Syngenta program GMOs? They basically have issued a patent on animals that they can show have been genetically altered by the food that they've ingested. I mean, we're basically there right now, aren't we?
We're very close to... Look, it's all coming down. I mean, it really is when you think about it.
It really is. I mean,
we are living in the latter days.
Yeah.
The last of the last days. It's all coming down. And you know, I just don't know how much time we have left here before we get taken out. I hope it's sooner than later. Who wants to be around? But,
right.
With all this nonsense going down. But, the game changer for me is when the mile wide ships appear. That's the game changer, and that's going to happen at some point. You know, all one needs to do is just see what the other side of the aisle is talking about, the exopolitic crowd, the people on Ancient Aliens. They all know it's there. And like I said earlier, many of the governments of the world, like Mexico, France, Germany, UK, Japan, Belgium, Peru, have all acknowledged the so-called extraterrestrial presence. I mean, they're all talking about it.
Right.
So, look. The elephant in the room is the U.S., and we just keep poking fun at it. You know, meanwhile, the lights in the sky, and there was a sightings over California, and you know, they always yuck it up. Well, we're here talking about those little green men again, Bob. I mean, it's so stupid. You know, come on, guys.
Well, it's gotta something be part of, I know I've been reading quite a bit about the Eisenhower connection too. There's a lot of reports out there that believe that Eisenhower back in his day, you know, essentially through DARPA and the military labs teamed up with aliens so that they could exchange technology, and then in part of that was that we were going to allow a certain member or a certain amount of population, you know, Taino people. And that's when you get into like the Nome, Alaska situation. And as far as I'm concerned, where that, that accord was broken and it's ramped, it's gone crazy out of control. But are you of that opinion as well, that the reason that we're not being disclosed here in the United States is because there's heavy collusion between like DARPA and the military labs and, the development, that these people are all working together supposedly?
There are too many people that have come forward saying exactly that thing.
Right.
Exactly that thing. People, whistleblowers, abductees, experiencers, all talk about seeing, along with the aliens, seeing men in uniform. It's just, I mean, look, it's high strangeness. It is. But something's going on here, and it's interdimensional. It's not extraterrestrial, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people, we have a right to know what's going on.
Well, yeah.
And typically, we're not told. But remember, this has been in place, and one of the linchpins of this is the Darwinian paradigm, which sets up the whole coming great deception, which is, I've labeled it my term. When this thing comes, look, 2 Thessalonians is the prophecy, and I realize it's controversial and people have different opinions about it. But it says basically that, know this, that day will not come. What day? The day of the Lord, and the revealing of the Antichrist. So the son of perdition will not be revealed until there is a great apostasia, in the Greek, apostasy, a falling away. Some people look at the word falling away and say, oh, that means the rapture. No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean the rapture. It means falling away as an apostasy. And it's an event. It's called the apostasy in the Greek. Apostasia, the apostasy. It's a one-time event.
Okay.
And that begs the question, what would happen on this planet? What event could happen on this planet that could change people's paradigms and do so instantly? And that, of course, in my opinion, is the revealing of the so-called extraterrestrial presence.
Right. I'm still that's more it. In the camp of CERN right now, because, you know, we talked about it. We kind of opened up the program talking about CERN.
Sure.
And saying, you know, well, these guys are, you know, what are they doing? Are they potentially trying to look in? They came out in the news and they said, we're trying to open up other dimensions and see if we can prove that gravity goes back and forth. They're talking about gravity's rainbow. I mean, that's not conjecture. They're saying if we ramp it up to, 10 terabolts or whatever, we're going to see 6 dimensions. And if we ramp it up to 14 terabolts, we're going to see 10 dimensions, and we're going to see if gravity can go back and forth between them. That is some frightening stuff. And to me, that's the paradigm shift, is if they do happen to open up some sort of portal to another dimension, what is going to be waiting on the other side, LA, you know?
I like the way you just said that. And that's, I mean, what are we going to let in, you know? What are we doing here, folks? And this is why, you know, we were joking about this the other day, not really joking, but the whole thing with the implants and all this, it's like, and Monsanto and all the DNA manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't come back soon, there'll be no humans to come back to. And that's the problem here. And that's why I think that we're really rapidly moving into a window of time where we're reaching critical mass on all levels. It's just not, you know, you mentioned CERN. That's just, you know, CERN, the UFO thing, the Middle East, the volcanic activity, the earthquakes in diverse places. Look at the wars and rumors of war. Look at the collapse of the dollar.
Yeah.
Right now it's at record high, but that doesn't mean doodly squat. You know, I mean, look at the dropping in oil. All this is manipulated. We're being manipulated left and right. There's a clip I show on the blog, and I show it when I'm out in, you know, giving talks and stuff. And by the way, I will be out, very, very quickly here. Let me just say something. April 16th to 19th, Northeast Prophecy Summit. Go to the blog, lamarzulli.wordpress.com. The 24th or the 26th in Memphis, Tennessee. The 28th in Nashville. So we've got a bunch of conferences coming up. Go to the blog, lamarzulli.wordpress.com. See if there's one near you and come out there.
Yeah.
And I show this clip, JD, which is just astounding. And it was the comedian Conan showed it first on his program. And what it is a bunch of talking heads, like in Los Angeles and Phoenix and Boston, all over the United States. And they're all saying the same byline. They're reading off a teleprompter, but it's 15 different talking heads. And they're going, you don't need us to tell you that gas prices are on the rise.
Right.
Cut to the talking head in Phoenix. You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise. Cut again. And it's all these people doing it in a slightly different way, but reading off a teleprompter, the same exact byline. Are you kidding me? Where is this from? It's control. It's a managed agenda, as Chuck Missler likes to call it. It is managed down to where the local news guys are all saying, you don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise. Oh, really? Oh, really? And why is that? Come on, man.
Oh, I agree. I mean, well, it's because six corporations own just about all the media that we see anymore. Well, that's why having you onto our program is so important, because there's just not a lot of venues out there left that will talk about things that are really going on. And I agree. I saw that clip. We actually talked about that with Dr. Tenpenny yesterday. Just remarkable. And if you want to go even a step further than that, there's a fantastic documentary that I think was produced in the late 80s called Spin, where a guy basically used to have one of those ginormous satellite dishes in his yard and just recorded everything that was coming down. And so they got all of the news segments, but between the air, you know, the stuff that wasn't actually supposed to go out live. And some of the conversations between the news hosts and their guests off air are absolutely, they're bone, you know, bone chilling, kind of blood curdling type stuff, the way these people are talking. This level of control has been going on for such a long time. I don't know what we're going to do about it, really, to be honest. In LA, we've only got a few minutes left. What kind of words of advice or wisdom would you have to leave us with today, sir?
Well, I mean, look, there's people out there who don't know who Yeshua is and don't understand the prophecies of the biblical narrative from Genesis to Revelation that are thousands and thousands of years old. And yet we see their fulfillment and partial fulfillment happening on the world stage today. We are involved in a cosmic war, the cosmic chess match, as I call it. And this war is reaching a climax. And it's like you've got to decide whose side are you going to be on. Are you gonna side on the side where Katy Perry is with the fallen one? And the beast, you know, the woman that rides the beast, what we saw at the halftime in Ishtar, is that the side that you're gonna be on? Or, you know, the Highway to Hell Boys, AC/DC?
Oh God, wasn't that
unbelievable. And then Madonna really coming out with all the, you know, all the horn, just buffoonic characters. I mean, there it is. It's in your face. Or you're going to side with the real God and his son, Yeshua, who died for us on Calvary 2,000 years ago. And by his blood, we are free from our sins. We are forgiven from all the nasty junk that we do. And all of us, every one of us is broken. That's why we need a savior. When he comes into our life, things change. So if I leave you with nothing else, check that out and then go to the website. And, you know, check out some of the stuff that we got for sale there. These resources are incredible. And I guarantee you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, I got to mention, too, the On the Trail of the Nephilim, those two books that you got, the two. Oh, my gosh. Ladies and gentlemen, those are like coffee table size books, full color pictures. I totally forgot to even mention those. I have both of those books, and they are, you know, permanent on my coffee table. So, L.A., we're just about out of time, man. I want to thank you again for joining us on the program today. Are you going to be doing Coast to Coast tonight? Did I get that rumor correct as well?
No, I'm on IMTV today with host George Norrie. And that links up on the blog.
Gotcha. So yes, ladies and gentlemen, please go support LA, man. This is, one of these people out there that just, you know, he's not pulling any punches. He's telling you exactly the way he feels. And again, you know, I always come back to the idea that it's not necessarily what each of us believe, but you have to understand that there are a group of people out there that really understand what it is that they're doing with the Katy Perry stuff and with the CERN stuff. They're actively working in opposition to, humanity as far as I'm concerned. So, LA, I commend you. I commend your work, and I appreciate you being here today, sir.
JD, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. Take care.
Absolutely. You do the same, sir. We'll look forward to talking to you soon. Please go, ladies and gentlemen, to LAMerzulli.net. Check out his blog as well, and also check out his show on Acceleration Radio. We are out of time today. We'll see you guys tomorrow, and Kenneth Shorchen Jr. from The Daily Economist will be joining us, so we'll be talking more about the economy and geopolitical developments and all kinds of stuff. So you guys be safe out there. Keep it here for Roger Sales' show coming up.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are.
TFR. Make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.